Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
This holiday season, give the gift of power and precision with Works Power Tools at Menards. Whether you're building, fixing, or crafting, Works drills deliver the power and control for any project. For those tougher jobs, Works impact drivers provide all the torque needed to make heavy-duty tasks a breeze. Hurry in today and pick up your 20-volt Works cordless drill or driver now at Menards.
Warm season's greetings to you all from Menards.
It can get lonely climbing Mount McKinley, so to entertain myself, I go to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, I can play hundreds of online casino-style games for free, like online slots, bingo, slingo, and more. Plus, I get a daily login bonus. It's just too bad that up here, I don't have anyone to share my excitement with. Woohoo! Woo-hoo!
Live the Chumba life anytime, anywhere. Play for free now at ChumbaCasino.com.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Edge of Sports podcast, brought to you by The Nation Magazine. I'm Dave Zirin, here to speak to you this week about a topic we don't usually talk about on this podcast, where sports and politics come together. But I think something that we're all wrestling with right now is what it means to have this government by bros in office that we're going to be facing, like these right-wing, reactionary, white dudes. And where does this archetype come from that somehow this is an okay thing to be? And it all clicked with me that we can best understand the mentality of these fascist barbarians marching into the White House by understanding the 1980s film Douche. If you are a villain in a 1980s movie, then guess what? You are probably the archetype of the most catastrophic right-wing eradication of bourgeois democratic norms in the history of the Republic. Or at least since Andrew Johnson. But we're in Andrew Johnson territory, to put it mildly, except now Andrew Johnson is on social media. So, this is, I think, what we need to do. We need to unpack this question of the 1980s film Douche. Who is the biggest jerk, if you will? And maybe we'll say jerk for the purposes of this, because I'm only comfortable saying that word so many times. Who is the biggest jerk of the 1980s film ledger? If we can figure this out, then we could figure out the mentality of who's going to be in office, we can deconstruct them, and we can defeat them. Joining me in this quest, film aficionado, longtime worker on several film projects of great known to all. Yet I'm not going to say what they are, but let's just say the insider accounts are juicy. Let's bring her on right now. Spring Super. Spring, how are you doing?
I'm good. I am so excited for this. Thanks for having me.
I'm thrilled to, but because I was not quite sure how you wanted me to introduce you, maybe just say a little bit about your experience in the industry so people can know I'm not just talking to some pisher, as we say in Yiddish, but somebody who actually knows what she's talking about.
Well, I worked behind the scenes in lots of different areas of the industry for about 22 years.
Wow.
Film, television, years. Theater, commercials, live performance, music, musicians, album covers. So I've seen and heard a lot of things.
Okay, so Emmy, Tony, Grammy, Oscar winners, the number that you've worked with, over or under 50?
Oh, gosh. I'd probably say over, yeah.
I was thinking, too, as I said the number, because it's not just about the incredible array of on-screen performers you've worked with. You and I both know, you know, and you as a top flight makeup artist know that this is a collective project, you know, so as, and I just wanted to have you on because as we talk about these 80s movie jerks, we also need to give a shout out to all the acting coaches, the dialect coaches, the hairstylists, the makeup artists, the soundtrack director, everything that collectively went into these performances. Because one thing I'll say, Spring, about these 9 performances, they are all indelible. But I really do think, as they said in Highlander, there can be only one. So,
that's right.
You ready for these nominees?
Yes, bring them.
I'm going to read them off. And if there's someone you kind of wish would be there or could be there, please do say so.
I will. I was thinking about that.
Yeah, because
and some people came to mind, and I'm comparing them. You know, I'll compare them against who we have.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Let's go through this and see what the dealio is. And I have one that I think should be there. So the nominees are Kiefer Sutherland's performance as Ace in Stand By Me, Thomas F. Wilson as Biff in Back to the Future, the immortal, the late great Bill Paxton as Chet in Weird Science, James Spader as Steph in Pretty in Pink, Ted McGinley as Stan Gable in Revenge of the Nerds, the great William Atherton as Walter Peck in Ghostbusters, William Zabka, Billy Zabka, as Johnny in The Karate Kid, and the late great Paul Gleason as Vernon, the principal in The Breakfast Club. Who is the biggest jerk? Who is the biggest D-bag? Who is the biggest template for our current governmental state? I've been talking way too much. Spring, before we get started with these folks, is there anyone not there that you think should have at least been in consideration?
So far, no. So far, no. For some reason, the douche and Goonies came to mind, but you know, again, as I like compare them mentally to these other guys, I think this list is pretty solid.
I do too. Because it's so funny. Anytime you do lists like this, I think the rule of the list is if you think there is somebody who should be there, then you also have to make a case why someone else should be taken off. You can't.
Right. And I do think that this, you know, this list is kind of reaching actually on a couple folks.
Yeah, I do too. They're already pushing the boundaries. I mean, my favorite John Hughes connected movie is, I think you know about me, is Some Kind of Wonderful. So, you know, I think about Craig Sheffer's performance in that.
Yeah.
It's the rich asshole, but that's kind of a ripoff of James Spader's Steph anyway, so can't really go there too hard. I can't go too hard for Craig Sheffer. I can't go too hard for Michael Bowen in one of our favorite films of all time, Valley Girl.
Yes, that came to mind too.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. The other thing that came to mind as I was thinking of these films and this time period and everything is that when I go back and look at these movies now, even the good guy is borderline a bad guy. Everyone was just kind of douchey.
Yeah.
To each other. And, you know, especially I would say the attitudes of men towards women in films from that period, especially.
By the way.
Or even the good guy was still kind of a douche to his girlfriend or his mom or whatever.
Let me just say, Spring, as a, you as a non-cishet male, please say douche as much as you want. I'm just not too comfortable over saying it. So, but by all means.
I like jerk better. That's good. But
No.
We might need a stronger word than jerk for these, some of these jerk guys.
Jerk doesn't quite work, yeah. Because I really do believe there's a political significance in actually understanding who really stands at the top of this mountain. Who is the template? Where have these complete barbarians gotten their moral sense and structure from? So, who is the biggest 80s film D-bag? Yeah. Oh, and also, I think we got to say, and it says something about how the film industry has changed. Like, you're not going to have a Regina here, as played by Rachel McAdams in Mean Girls, for example, because they didn't really have movies about women and girls with this template. You didn't have movies about, you know, young black kids, you know, just living life, you know?
Yeah, that's
and
a good point.
It took a long while to get there, honestly. Like, for a while, it was like, okay, we'll talk about black kids, but only in the context of gangs, criminality, etc. But like actual, just like life, you know, that we're still fighting for those kinds of stories to be told, even though far more so now, you know. I mean, but now, like, you got great indie films about like gay teenagers, and there's a jerk, and you know, and it's not because they're homophobic, but just because they're a jerk. I mean, I'm glad things are less reductive and more expansive now. Not that we still don't have a way to go, but it is fascinating that we're talking about these collection of D-bags. They're all white cishet men. And I'm only saying that because I think that's one of the reasons these power brokers in Washington now, the Trumpists, why they draw so much inspiration and love from them. Because that's the apex of the kind of cishet white dude they want to be.
Yeah. I was just watching Diary of a Wimpy Kid with my kids today. And, you know, the quote unquote wimpy kid is, you know, kind of a D-bag. And he has to sort of, you know, learn the hard way what that, you know, brings when, you know, you act like that towards your friends and family. Nowadays, you'll lose your friends, you know. It was again like the good guy is, you know, being a jerk, and the bad guy has got to be really bad.
Yeah.
To outdo that.
No, exactly. I've seen the Wimpy Kid movies, and I hear what you're saying. It's almost like they're too ironic for words. Like, even the kids movie has to have some kind of anti-hero element. And frankly, I also think that's a cultural move that this country's made in the last quarter century that gives rise to acceptance of people like Trump. Like the idea that, you know, like the Tony Soprano, you know, the charming sociopath.
Right.
I look at that wimpy kid and I'm like, this dude's going to grow up to, you know, kill people just to see the expression on their face change.
Well, he certainly suffers from anxiety and no one's noticing that. He's extremely worried about what everyone thinks of him and what's going to happen, and has, you know, these sort of fatalistic scenarios play out that are unrealistic. But no one seems to address that, which, you know, also reminds me of the 80s.
Yeah, great where,
you know,
yeah.
Only boys had ADHD and girls didn't have any of that stuff. And, you know, you just lived like that. You lived in fear of your bullies, and you had to, you know, get tough and be able to fight and take it on. And now we all have anxiety and PTSD.
But you know, movies, like people don't realize like how influential a movie like, for example, 3 o'clock High was with Casey Shamasco, where he has to fight the bully at the end of the school day. I know you've seen that, Spring. If you haven't seen
No,
Three O'Clock High,
I haven't.
all
I
right,
don't
as
think I
when we
have.
get off this call, you are seeing 3 o'clock High. This
This is great.
is foundational 80s stuff. But the bully thing, you're right. I mean, so many of the quote unquote D-bags that we're going to be discussing were in a situation where they had to be physically defeated for the hero to triumph. Violence can only defeat the bully. And I think that's very interesting to me as well. As
We
certain.
could have a whole episode on like analyzing how all of these bullies and jerks that we're talking about today were sort of confronted or stopped, or
Let's do
were
it.
they,
Well, why don't
you
we
know,
just
or
do
did
that
they
for
just get
this
to
one?
go on and be jerks? Like, what did people do to actually deal with these, you know? Because I think dealing with a sociopath, like, I think that's a very hot topic right now. I think people are learning what that is. You know, they're only, you know, what 2% of the population. And I think, you know, there's a stereotype that there's this sort of like violent, you know, serial killer. And it's clearly not what all sociopaths are at all.
Not at all, just the
But
one.
I think narcissists and sociopaths, I think that's something that is sort of being talked about a lot lately. At least I've seen it on social media, and people are trying to, I think, understand what that means for people and their personalities, and how to navigate relationships with those people, because you know it's not easy,
Well, let me tell
especially if
you.
it manifests in behavior like these bullies.
Exactly. And, you know, these are very important, very delicate topics, and I'm just glad people have access to Google to find out the answers.
Right.
We're not
That's
leading with our
Ask Google
best.
AI.
Oh, yeah, AI. AI, my
Yeah.
neighbor, a sociopath. Okay. But yo, so I think, do you think it's worth it for me to very quickly, before we start whittling this list down, very quickly to say who they were and how the, what made them bad, if you will,
Absolutely. You read my
how
mind.
they were defeated.
Yep. Let's
We're
do
gonna
it.
run through it real quick.
Let's do it.
All right. All right, so let's just go through it real quick. Okay, Kiefer Sutherland as Ace in Stand By Me was going to cut River Phoenix's throat before he was defeated by Wil Wheaton shooting a gun into the air out of nowhere. And then Ace basically pissed himself and ran away. Okay, that's how, so he was defeated with the power of the gun. Biff in Back to the Future, defeated when George changes history, played by Crispin Glover, by knocking Biff into next week with a roundhouse punch, interrupting Biff's sexual assault of George's future wife and Marty's mom, who was being a little, you know, a little rough with Marty herself. Okay, that's a whole different conversation. Okay.
You know.
You know. Okay, Chet in Weird Science.
Ooh.
Such a bully, infamous in my house for telling a hungover Wyatt, his little brother, that as Wyatt was nauseous, that he should think of a greasy pork sandwich served in a dirty ashtray. Chet was
Such a
defeated.
good performance.
Chet was defeated when Kelly LeBrock turned him into a farting frog thing. Like just the most disgusting, grotesque
Oh
creature
my
that
gosh.
John Hughes could conjure. And so that's, you know, how
So
he was
good.
defeated. Steph in Pretty of De in Pink, defeated with words, if you recall. Molly
Oh yes.
Ringwald shows up to the prom, shocking everyone, or the dance, whatever the fuck it was. Andrew McCarthy looks at James Spader and he says something like, "Do you remember spring?"
No, not verbatim.
Me neither, but it was something like, "You're a joke, Steph." And she knows it. And deep
down, know it too. Something like that, yeah.
And those words just defeated him. And frankly, here is where his doppelganger, Craig Sheffer, in Some Kind of Wonderful, has a much more satisfying ending, because it's actually, that's one of the reasons why I love Some Kind of Wonderful. They were happy with Craig Sheffer just being defeated verbally, the way Andrew McCarthy defeated James Spader verbally. And Eric Stoltz puts his arm around Leah Thompson. Interesting that it's Leah Thompson, Back to the Future mm-hmm. connection, when she's so passive in the face of Biff's assault in Back to the Future. Andrew mm-hmm. Eric Stoltz, I'm sorry, has his arm around Leah Thompson walking away from Craig Sheffer and says something like, "Yeah, there's nothing we can do to him that he hasn't already done to himself." And Leah Thompson says, "Yeah, I wish that was good enough for me." And she goes back and smacks the shit out of him 2-3 times. And they're all like, "What?" Much so more good. Satisfying ending.
Definitely.
Because you have finally a female protagonist, because all these characters, practically, not all of them, but almost all of them, are horrible patriarchal sexists. And that's really the only one where the woman gets to do the beatdown. Oh, Kelly LeBrock, too. Respect. Okay.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Kelly LeBrock, like, has, like, magic. Doesn't count.
I mean, Johnny does get, you know, beat. But...
Ooh, the big punch from Elizabeth Shue mm-hmm. in the dance scene. I shouldn't disrespect that either. But let's not get ahead.
And he actually gets, you know, the crane kick to the face. So.
Hmm. All right, we just covered Steph in Pretty in Pink. Walter Peck in Ghostbusters, played by William Atherton. We talked about this off air. Ghostbusters, which obviously classic, loved it. It's also like an incredibly right-wing 1980s movie where the Ghostbusters are the renegades taking care of what needs to be taken care of with their big swinging, you know, streams, if you will.
Yep.
And William Atherton works for the Environmental Protection Agency, trying to make sure that we don't die in New York from whatever toxic sludge these guys are pouring out in their streams. And he's the bad guy. He's the douche. And it ends with goop, like, falling on his head after he's just been eviscerated verbally over and over again.
He gets carried. He gets carried with slime, like Carrie.
Yes.
Instead of pig's blood, it's slime.
So that's that. That's his MO. Johnny and the Karate Kid, we just talked about it, gets the punch on the dance floor from Liz Shu and the crane kick of all crane kicks. Vernon in the Breakfast Club.
Oh, Vernon.
Not physically. He gets
so hateable.
He gets a mean letter. That's what happens. Remember? That's his only come up.
The worst he does is try to ruin a whole bunch of kids' lives.
Yes.
No big deal.
Yeah, exactly. And then Stan in Revenge of the Nerds, just a real bully. Much more in the bully canon, I think, than douche, but still.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And he's only defeated when they lose the big campus Olympics against the Tri-Lams.
Yeah. And that movie and Ghostbusters, to me, are the first ones that come to mind when I think of looking back on it. And the good apparent good guys are, you know, what the kids are calling these days, cringy.
Well,
you know, their behavior is kind of just despicable at times too, and dare I say sexist.
Well, let's go through really quick.
Just saying.
Let's throw down with that on a couple of these. Molly Ringwald has talked about how the Breakfast Club now really upsets her because of the scene with the camera between her legs with Judge picking up her skirt. And that was played with like hijinks and Judd Nelson being the hero. Doesn't look so good now. Biff, we discussed the fact that this is clearly a rape that's about to happen. And it was, you know, in this friendly film, it's like a plot point to be overcome. Yep. I don't think you would take that today. And then
in Revenge of the Nerds, he, you know, makes the girl believe that he is someone else, her boyfriend, and they go on to, you know, have sex. And then afterwards, she finds out he is not who she thinks he is. That's what the good guy was doing.
So isn't it fascinating? And then Steph is Steph. I mean, so isn't it fascinating that the only project here not awash in rape culture is actually Stand By Me? A film that has no women in it.
And maybe Karate Kid. I don't really see any.
You're right. Nothing in Karate Kid. Sorry about that. Apologies to the entire
I got a soft spot for Johnny. I think we talked offline about whether or not he should even be on this list because, you know, he is a bullied bully and still a, you know, minor, a child, and, you know, I think compared to some of these other guys, it's a little.
I'm glad you
definitely a bully.
Because that gets to the first thing, which is like, who should just be the hell off this list right away?
Right.
And you just said, so I think we each get to knock somebody off as we get to who we think is the person. So let's just go, we can go back and forth and just knock people off. You're going to take Johnny to knock off?
For sure. Yeah.
And reason.
Especially if you watch the later Karate Kid series, Cobra Kai, you know, he at least gets to reform himself and try to become a better person. I don't know if any of these other guys would have even considered that.
And you also, you know, there is the scene in Karate Kid that has to be considered where you do see Kreese really bullying Johnny to hurt Danny LaRusso. And, you know, that immediately gives the character more of a depth than he otherwise had. And as we
and he's a kid.
Much more in the
hurt high school
canon. So, yeah, and as I said before, I'm also taking out Walter Peck in Ghostbusters. I think having somebody be a quote-unquote D-bag because they actually care about the environment is just, you know, right-wing slop. So, no John.
Yeah, like he was snarky, but.
Okay. Who's your next one? Who else is being taken off for you and why?
I don't know if I want to take anybody else off, to be honest. I definitely, there are some that rose straight, you know, cream of the crop of D-bags, if you will, right away in my mind, you know, when I looked at this list.
Well, you know what, you could be a big help to me because I think I've whittled this down and I think I have the correct choice.
Nice.
And if it's okay with you, I'd like to do that and then have you tell me if you think I got this or if I think I really need to think of this through a little bit more. Remember, the implications of this are huge because it's going to be about how we in fact understand the government and what we need to do.
Right, right. I don't think this is representative of their performances because this is the character, right? Like, my opinion on who had a better performance might be different, right, than
absolutely.
Who I thought was the biggest D-bag. So nothing personal to any of these performers. Nothing some of whom I have worked with, to be honest, which I'm not going to say because I don't want to make anyone think I'm biased. I'm not.
Well, we all know about your, you know, years-long working relationship with Ted McGinley. he's just the one I find most humorous on. All right. So you know how I feel. So Johnny and Walter Peck off the list no matter what. Ted McGinley as Stan Gable in Revenge of the Nerds absolutely should not be on this list for two reasons. One, McGinley looks 35. I mean, the idea that he's in college is so silly. I mean, look at that. Is that a rug? I mean, for goodness sakes. And also, have to say that the, like we were saying, the protagonist is particularly in this film are pretty horrifying. And
yeah.
So it's like, who's the D-bag here? I mean, maybe, you know, it's just like you root for the meteor to hit Earth when you're watching Revenge of the Nerds. Ace, Kiefer Sutherland. I don't want him on the list because, trust me, as a 12-year-old who watched Stand By Me in the theater, Ace was freaking terrifying. Would you call Freddy Krueger a douche? I don't think so. That's where Kiefer Sutherland lies for me. Much more in that category of things. So no Ace. All right. And
great.
Also, I got to get Vernon off the list, partly because some of those kids, you know, Vernon being the principal in Breakfast Club, some of those kids deserved some fucking detention. You know? Oh, boo-hoo. Oh, you have always so many problems. You got to win. You got to win. Wow. You know, try. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah, I get it. I get it.
There are things I could say.
He was a jerk. He was a jerk for sure, but
he
didn't really get away with much in the end.
Yeah, and you ever heard the expression steel sharpens steel?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he was a jerk because he's running up all day against the John Benders and the Estevezes and the Ali Sheedys and the Ringwalds. Maybe it's just too much for him.
And all their parents.
You got to win. You got to win. It's like, yes, you're an athlete. You got to win. I'm so sorry your dad said that to you. Jesus.
You're not really oppressed.
Yeah, or don't play.
Just because
don't
you
play.
Have a detention on a Saturday. You missed one day of whatever you were going to do.
You know, they acted like they were like in some sort
no
of...
No good.
They were acting like they were in some sort of World War II prison camp. Get over yourselves, for God's sakes.
Well, all these white kids are so oppressed.
Yes,
all these rich white kids were so oppressed, by the way.
John
that was like the nicest high school I've ever seen.
Man, that high school.
John Hughes movies, everyone's rich.
That high school looked like what I imagine NASA to look like at that time. So the long of it and the short of it is, get him out of there, because the older I get, the more sympathetic I am to the great Paul Gleason. And let me tell you something, John Medbender. If he did raid Barry Manilow's wardrobe, he could do a lot worse. You could do a lot worse, sir. How dare you? Sorry. My Keith Olbermann voice. Okay. So there we go. So that leaves Biff, Chet, and Steph. Okay? That leaves Biff from Weird Science. No, I'm sorry. 3, 2, 1. That leaves Biff from Back to the Future, Chet from Weird Science, Steph from Pretty in Pink. Who is the biggest D-bag of the 1980s? Who is the template for our politics? First, you gotta clear out Steph. You know, that dude would not have lasted 5 minutes in my high school. I mean, I think to be a true sort of like template D-bag, that's got to travel a little bit.
Yeah.
You can't like be deposited from your preppy school and all of a sudden, you know, you're the kid hiding in the corner of the library. It's got to travel. So no Steph.
Yeah.
And that leaves Biff and Chet. And it's tough to choose that one.
This is kind of tough. Yeah. I'm trying to, because they're different. They're different.
They're different.
Could they be different but equal?
This is tough. You know, and I really struggle.
We're going to have to really whittle this down to like.
And you know
what's worse?
Does it matter? Let me just throw some of this stuff at you. Does it matter that Biff has become kind of like this cultural icon / staple? You know, you're a Biff.
Yeah.
You know, means something and it's connected to the movie. I know sometimes people say you're a Chet, but I never think they mean that to be like, oh, Weird Science reference. But people say, oh, you're a Biff.
They're both really well written characters in the sense that like these guys are real. We all know guys like this. We really do. And that's, you know, they're sort of like breaking down their psychology and the way that these guys are the reason these guys are jerks and the way in which they go about their jerkiness.
Weird Science is like a movie that people like you and me like to talk about. Back to the Future is this generational film.
Yeah. You know,
that parents pass down to their kids, and
certainly way bigger.
Screens. Yeah. Outdoor shows in the summertime. And
And we get to see Biff get older, and what he becomes is basically a Trump.
And
you think about it, he's got the big, you know, giant hotel that's sleazy and he thinks looks good, but it's tacky. That's so crazy. Trump. And to me, Trump is like the model sociopath right now of the kind of sociopath that, you know, we should be afraid of. And, you know, we need to worry about
and
deal with as a society, or, you know, as individuals. This is the kind of people we deal with in life and have to somehow survive them.
So I think it's pretty clear, if you're listening to this, that we probably both agree that the winner of this competition is Thomas F. Wilson as Biff. Back to the Future. That is the D-bag of the 1980s. That is the template for Trump, Trumpian politics, and everything we're dealing with right now. So now let's get it to the movie itself. How is Biff defeated? And is there a template for Trump? Biff is defeated, I think, on two fronts. One, the whole, the meek shall inherit the earth. You know, the rising up of George, the person you'd least expect.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something there.
The revenge of the nerd, if you will.
Well put. Well put. And wow, another similarity. God, the toxic masculinity on this. Crispin Glover's character, remember, was a peeping Tom looking in windows.
Oh my God, see, cringy again.
Just like the nerd.
A good guy is cringy.
Just like the nerds put the cameras in the girls' dorms or whatever, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Revenge of the Nerds, they were literally chasing, didn't they sneak in and not only just peep, but they snuck in?
Spring, I believe you're referring to the youthful hijink known as the panty raid.
Oh, yes. And is that Animal House? Am I mixing those two up?
That's just Revenge.
Okay, good. I do sometimes mix those up. They're two, you know, college.
With sexual assaults that people laughed about at the time, yeah.
Yeah, they had some.
Actually, on this question, though, Revenge of the Nerds is actually worse than Animal House, and one would have struggled to think that was possible.
Yeah, for sure.
That's a movie with an all-time D-bag too, by the way.
Revenge of the Nerds is it's very telling about how our society deals with things.
Yeah, and its time and place. Mm-hmm. So I think so there's the meek shall rise. Hopefully the meek won't be as sleazy as George McFly. But there's the other lesson too, which is like, he becomes the winner, Biff does, in Back to the Future too, because what was it, like Marty left behind like some almanac with
sports almanac.
It's like, who won the world,
gets rich bitten on the races, probably used his grandma's money.
Yeah.
Stereotype of him living with his grandma's classic. I mean, it's just, he's such a good character.
Mm-hmm. So that means we also got to learn our history. And bet on the Dodgers to repeat. I think those are the lessons.
Yeah, that's it. Those are the only lessons we can take away from that. Yeah.
Well, that was a healthy exercise. Spring Super, anything you want to add at the end of the pod? Did we learn anything this week?
That maybe the Revenge of the Nerds really truly hasn't happened yet, in the sense of, we now have one of these guys as our president. And that's a little frightening. President again.
Lined alongside these Silicon Valley fascists who probably thought of themselves as the nerds, and now they want to wreak havoc on everybody who made them feel like anything other than the incels that they are.
Yeah. Well, okay. If we didn't learn any lessons about how to defeat them in these films, you know, we'll just have to keep trying though. And all of those characters are so good. The performances from those actors are so good. Knowing some of them and knowing that they are some of the loveliest people, like, you know, Bill Paxton's performance, I really don't want to underplay Chet, because Chet is a close second in this race. Chet's character is, you know, that spoiled rich kid with a gun who mm-hmm. hates everyone, you know, has no empathy. Like, he's scary. Who knows what Chet, if this was a movie about Chet and we knew more about what he was up to, we'd probably be frightened.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because the brilliance of Paxton's performance in that is that sense of menace, which is even more than the script gives him.
Yeah, like, you never know when he's going to show up.
But when he leans in to Kelly LeBrock, he doesn't know yet that she has superpowers or whatever it is that her character has, still undetermined where her powers came from. But he leans in and he says to her, "I'm going to butter your muffins." And it's not just like a gross con.
Yeah.
There's menace to it. Yeah. That he brought to it. Great. And I'm glad you said that too, because it's not the greatest point to end on. Like, I guess the lesson is men suck. The nerds, bullies. The nerds just want to grow up to be the new bullies. The nerds just want to grow up to be best friends with the bullies, so they can feel like the bully, Elon Musk, Donald Trump. You know, is this the lesson we're drawing from this? And the answer is, yeah, maybe. There's a certain toxicity that I think we're all trying to deal with in terms of how we're raised. And I'm specifically talking to my own brethren out there. And I think you see that run through all of this. In other words, everybody's a D-bag. But let's also remember, you know, nerds, bullies, all they're now joining arms to oppress us.
Yep. But
let me just end with this, though. I don't want to end with that. I want to end with what you said, which is the art of these performances. There's great acting at work here. And you picked out Paxton, is there? But let's go with this. Is there any other performance before we sign off that you just want to highlight and say, this was just some terrific acting and really well executed?
You know, they are all really good. I mean, they're iconic, sort of each in their own right. So I don't want to say one was better than the other in any way. But, you know, James Spader is always terrific.
Someone you worked with for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and when you know, it's funny because when you meet these folks in person and you work with them, and, you know, not all of them are good people. Some of them are just like, you know, what you see on the screen, and they're typecast and they're jerks on screen because they're jerks in real life. And it's easy for them to be a jerk in front of a camera. But more times than not, they are wonderful people. And so to see them be able to like turn that on and behave that way in front of a camera is that's talent. That's that's incredible. And it's I think that performance is terrific. And gosh, well, yeah,
that's all the one of them that are great, but I mean, that's I hear you. I really do. That's one to me that's really indelible, and he doesn't even have that much screen time.
Yeah. And Chet, you know, just to go back to Spader's character, you know, he represents another very real type of person, right? That it's super rich, entitled, you know, way older for his age than he should be, because he's, you know, had no supervision and given everything, and, you know, gets away with everything. You know, again, reminds me of our current president. You know, so this is like, that's just another, it's, you know, the performances are one thing, but the writing of these characters and the you know, their development with so few lines is so powerful. That's incredible. That's such a great performance to be able to do that.
You know, I want to give Thomas F. Wilson who played Biff before we go. I want to give him the Leah Thompson Award. No, I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. I'm going to actually ask my editor, Dave Tigaboo, to take away what I just said and start from here. 3, 2, 1. You know, I want to give Thomas F. Wilson, who, of course, played Biff so memorably in Back to the Future. I want to give him the Deborah Foreman Award. Deborah Foreman, of course, our heroine, goddess, Valley Girl, because it's sort of like, whatever happened to Deborah Foreman? Why didn't she become like this huge movie star out of this 80s classic? I sort of think that about Thomas F. Wilson. I mean, what a performance, what a platform. What the hell happened to him? And you know what? One other odd little bit of symmetry is, you know, I like to think I know a lot about movies. The only movies I can think of that Deborah Foreman and Thomas F. Wilson were in after their big splashes were horror films. They each did something in a horror film, and then I don't know anything. All right. So the only other performance, anything else you want to highlight performance-wise before
we start? Performance-wise, no. I do have something else I want to say about.
Then let me throw down with one last performance thing. The late, great Paul Gleason, who's on this list as the principal in The Breakfast Club.
Yes.
He brought to his role a sense of physical menace, which was really like you, when he had Judd Nelson alone in the office.
Yeah.
You felt like something really bad could happen. And there's
a certain
anger that he was able to emanate, and frankly, a certain vulnerability that Judd was able to emanate as well. That really, that was a special scene. So props to Paul Gleason, so memorable in Trading Places. And so
oh my gosh,
in The Breakfast Club. Rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace, for sure.
You had something else you'd like to say?
Well, it's just interesting. This morning I was watching again Reese Witherspoon during an acceptance speech was talking about the fact that she, you know, after reading script after script after script and watching films, the role of females in these situations is you know, also a big piece of how these bully characters are developed, right? You know, the people they sort of are soundboarding and the people around them and the way that they're treating them. And Reese Witherspoon, anyway, she says something along the lines of you read these scripts and the line when it comes to like a really serious situation, the line of the woman becomes, so what do we do now? And that, you know, like really irked her. And it's funny, you go back and you look at all these films and you're not going to be able to like she says, you're not going to be able to like not notice this anymore. But when you watch these films, that's sort of the role of the woman, is just sort of like something to bounce off of, you know, bounce your dialogue off of. Or further your plot, right? Further your story. What do we do now? Like they don't know what to do in these serious situations because I guess they're females and, you know, don't have ideas of their own. And she also points out, like, do you really know any women like that? Like, honestly, like we, you know, is a woman in an emergency just going to be like, what do we do?
Seriously, it's so funny. It's so the opposite of reality. I think about that when I think about the way that I'll just speak delicately, like a man's bathing suit area is incredibly delicate and a woman's bathing suit area is able to bear a child and yet the man's, it's like, yeah, you got balls, you know, it's tough, and yet a woman,
you got really sensitive
and also you're a p-word, you know. And, you know, is the ultimate insult, you know, and so turning strength into weakness and weakness into strength is, I guess, how patriarchy shapes words, similar to what you're saying.
Well, and the reason I brought it up is, you know, I think about the movies then, our 80s movies, right, that we're talking about, and movies now. And, you know, the fact that we have films like Mean Girls, you know, and films that sort of show a different side of women. And, you know, Reese Witherspoon and many others have produced a lot of films that are, you know, written by women and, you know, not just performed by women, but written by women, which is, you know, an important point, you know, that what do we do now? That line is not written by women writers, for sure. And that I just think, you know, if you look back at these 80s movies, I think we have made progress in the sense that, like, it really isn't playing out that way in films today in the same way. You know, where we, you know, stand up to our bullies a lot sooner, perhaps, or, you know, deal with them in a different way. Oh, and just to touch on quickly the fact that we were talking about, like, how these folks dealt with their bullies, how they defeated them. You know, if we talk about Biff, right, who is our sort of President Trump, the way that bully was dealt with was ultimately with violence and intimidation, right? Which is how our country deals with its problems. And
yes,
that sort of, like, almost patriotic version of dealing with your bullies to me is problematic.
Because look at what it's valorizing. And this is why the Elon Musks now want to be arm in arm with the Donald Trumps.
Yep.
Because it's like, it's how they view conquering the situation is befriending right. The bully, not defeating the bully.
Well, do we have, like, any films where it's like the bully and the you know, nerd bullied who then becomes rich, both then join forces and become ultimate bad guys? Because that to me would have to be the biggest D bag of all time, not just of the 80s.
No, amen.
So if anyone knows a film like that one, let's analyze that.
Describe it one more time.
And like an Elon Musk and a Trump, you know, the nerd who's bullied grows up to be rich, of course, because that's what they all do. And then they actually become friends with the bully, and the bully becomes like their muscle.
Well, wasn't the movie My Bodyguard sort of like that with Matt Flynn and Adam Baldwin, the legendary Christopher Makepeace who starred in Meatballs, and then
yes,
don't know what really happened to him. Could that's sort of that movie.
Yeah, a little bit. I feel like that's, I bet people listening to this are like, oh my God, it's this movie. Because there's got to be something.
No doubt. No, I think it was an episode of Silver Spoons when Ricky Schroeder hired Mr. T, because, you know, his family was so rich, to come into a school with him and face up against this bully.
Oh my God.
That was a great Silver Spoons episode.
Silver Spoons.
Here we are. Face to face, couple of silver spoons. Okay. All right. Well, Spring Super, thank you so much for going on this journey with me through 80s D-baggery.
It's been a ride for sure, but a lot of fun too.
Yeah, we've tobogganed down the waterfall of toxic white male masculinity and found ourselves on the safe shore of podcast moral superiority.
On the edge of, you know, solving all the world's problems, really.
Duh. Zoom.
My God.
Cha.
Totally.
So, yo, for everybody out there listening, and particularly our number one listener, Christopher Makepeace, please support The Nation magazine. Go to thenation.com. For everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.
Peace.